The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Which coast?
Traveling east to west.
Aaron Ladd.
No, he did it. No.
Mark Gunnels.
At the house on it.
Chiefs coast to coast.
Journey here. Got a lot of work around the house done. Dishes. Been tapping back in with the gym. Ironically, the gym is Chiefs fit. Just been taking it a little bit more slowly. You know, it was very high pace there for a minute there. So,
good time.
Just a whole lot of nothing. Yeah.
So when did things start picking back up for you again? I know spring training is coming up here soon.
Yeah, this is around the time of the year that you fire off that Royals fan tweet. You start talking about, hey, you know, can the Royals get me to training camp? I think you said that, wouldn't you?
I did.
What was the verdict?
They didn't even give me some Mother's Day.
That's sad. I'm about to send out this post really quick. Yeah, we'll do a little Royals. We'll do college basketball, obviously. Though I'm not very confident in your Jayhawks, my guy.
I'm not either.
I'm not very confident in your Jayhawks.
I mean, if only they could play every game in March Madness in Allen Fieldhouse.
And all the advantages that come with that.
Yeah, when you come to Allen, you're already down 10-0. You know that already.
There is something to neutral sites. I do think that like certain teams are more prepared for that than others. Word to the Super Bowl. It's a neutral site. You know, it's a different environment. Playing in a sterile atmosphere, playing in a crowd that's like mixed. I thought there was a lot of talk pregame about like, and we'll do a formal intro. I'm just kind of off the top here. Like, it was a lot of talk pregame. Oh, it's a pro Niners crowd. It's like that plays into the Chiefs' hands. They've been playing better on the road all year long. That doesn't mean anything to me.
For you being in the building, what would you say the percentage was? Like, it felt like it was 70% Niners fans.
I would say like 60, yeah, 60, 65, but the same way last year. I felt like it was a more pro-Philly crowd last year. Yeah, they were loud. They were into it. They like, you could feel the momentum swings. The Chiefs aren't impacted by that. They went into Buffalo and Baltimore and won games. I mean, they done played in some tough environments. Going into Vegas is a home game for them, basically.
Yeah, they're used to that stadium. They haven't lost there with Mahomes, I believe, yet, so. Very comfortable confines for them, to say the least.
Let's get into it, man. Chiefs Coast to Coast, Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. We missed y'all. We love y'all. It's good to be with y'all. It's been a tough week around the kingdom. We'll, of course, get into parade day and everything that was the Chiefs rally and all that a little bit later in the show. But we'll start by recapping Super Bowl 58. The Kansas City Chiefs win it in overtime, the longest Super Bowl game in NFL history. Is another one for Andy Reid and company. We'll break down the key plays, the unsung heroes, and there's already talk about a three-peat. Mark Gunnels is stirring the pot there, of course, as he always does. As we head into the offseason, the Chiefs have a long list of free agents. We'll look at L'Jarius Sneed. We'll look at Chris Jones. And then we'll go to Vegas on the way out, or, you know, maybe we'll leave Vegas. We'll give you all one last Vegas report, because Mark Gunnels, man. He pulled a rabbit out of a hat, dog.
I mean, you left me for dead. You left me for dead. You got to give me my flowers, man. That was a hell of a run.
Nobody saw this coming, right? Like, you didn't just have an MVS. I think I said in the chat one time you were Mark Quez Valdez, but you had a crazy, I think the number, without spoiling it, the number is 14-2 in your last 16 picks. Whew. So Mark made y'all some money, man. If you bet the house with Mark Gunnels, you have a few houses right now. So we'll recap what he finished out with in Super Bowl 58. Can't do without y'all. The fam, the audience, the listeners, we know it's a tough week. Voicemail line 816-514-1267. Tap in with us. Let us know how you're feeling about the title win, Super Bowl win, the week in Vegas, the rally, the parade day, whatever you want to do. If you want to holler at Mark for winning you some money, tap in with us. We love hearing y'all there. Of course, the review side, if you leave a review. I think I have some Super Bowl confetti back with me, so maybe we'll do something with some Super Bowl confetti. I'll ship you out some. That'll be my late birthday gift to Mav. Serta can come get some. your comments. We'll get to some questions at the end of the show. Let's start with the Chiefs recap.
Mahomes avoids. He's a magician.
Chiefs recap.
All right, so I'm glad that we actually do have a little bit of time to kind of let this one breathe. You know what it is by now. 25-22, Chiefs winning in overtime. I said dynasty cemented because we had this whole talk going into it on they need one more, they need the three, they need the back-to-back, they got it. The key plays, Mark, for you in Super Bowl 58 that helped Kansas City win back-to-back titles were what?
Well, I think the one that stands out the most to me, and probably a lot of people, that changed the momentum of the game was that muff punt. You could just sense the energy shift after that. I think they scored the very first play after that, if I believe.
One play drive after that. Yeah. MVS catches it. It's a one play drive.
Yeah.
And then Kansas City's leading. I think it's 13-12 after that, and then they kick the extra point to go 14-12.
Yeah, because before that, they couldn't get anything going offensively. I mean, it was tough sledding, to say the least. So
13-10.
Yeah. So to have that great of a field position and something that just demoralized the Niners, you could tell, because now you're giving Pat Mahomes the ball, like, what, at the 10-yard line or whatever it was, first down right there. And, you know, if you're the Niners at that point, you just want to play ball control because you're believing your defense. I mean, they haven't had a sustained full drive on you all game up until this point. So to give them that short of a field and to have the Chiefs take the lead for the first time, I think was definitely the major turning point that stood out to me.
A lot of key plays. I wrote down just a few. Let us know what your key plays are in the chat. The McCaffrey first drive fumble. I know we get lost in a lot of things when a game goes into overtime. There's only, what, so many seconds left on the clock. But, like, that was points. And that was a drive that kind of started the game script a certain way for San Francisco. If they get three or seven there, you're playing catch up. You're playing behind the eight ball. Maybe Mahomes and the offense don't have as much time to figure things out offensively. And it's one of those plays for Leo Chanel that was part of a really big day for him. Fast forwarding to the fourth quarter, the 2-minute warning, the McDuffie blitz. And the call by Steve Spagnuolo to blitz the corner on that play in that situation with the Super Bowl on the line, because you're understanding there, if they get the first down, they can basically bleed the clock out, kick the field goal, and the Super Bowl is over. I think they kind of showed that. There's been a lot of film breakdowns in the aftermath. I think they kind of showed him fake blitz, step back into coverage, and then that time he comes, Purdy just sees the flash of red and gets rid of it. That, in hindsight, is one of those plays where it's like the game and the balance of the Super Bowl is hanging. But for me, Mark, the biggest plays for the Chiefs in this game had to deal with Patrick Mahomes and his legs, the scramble ability by him. We don't talk enough about his running ability. Obviously, he's not a Lamar Jackson type of runner. He's not even a Josh Allen type of runner.
You don't get it.
But one of the things that kind of stood out to me in this aftermath was like how effective his runs are. I think we're looking at one now. If you're rocking with us on the visual audience, this is overtime. Yeah. Third and one, goes for 19 yards. Think back to the fourth down on that drive as well. The things that they were doing to Joey Bosa, putting him in the blender as far as the decision maker, seeing red, he's chasing Clyde Edwards-Helaire down the field, and Mahomes is 8 yards up. They showed things they hadn't done before. They're so afraid to run Mahomes on fourth and short, and then all of a sudden in the biggest game of the year, he makes the biggest plays with his legs.
Yeah, that fourth and one, I mean, there was no doubt in my mind, right? The season on the line, the Super Bowl on the line, it's going to be in Mahomes' hands one way or another. Because the play before that, they ran Pacheco up the middle, and he got stuffed. So I knew there would be some type of play that at least gave him a run-pass option. And I think that's something they should do more in those third and fourth and short situations instead of that predictable HB dive that you do on Madden to try to get that 1 yard. Like, come on, we you know that's coming. So I was glad to see they did that. And Mahomes wasn't going to let them take the ball out of his hands in that spot anyway. But, yeah, I mean, you made a great point because we know outside of Rashee Rice and Kelce, this pass-catching group has been very inconsistent. And I think when it comes down to those crucial moments like that, Mahomes is like, hey, man, if I'm going to lose with the ball in my hand. So if my first or second option doesn't get open quick, I'm tucking and running. And I think you see him do that a lot more, especially when it comes to playoff football, because since it's do or die, it's win or go home. You know, during the regular season, you know, you can kind of play around a little bit and try to get your guys some confidence. But when it's money time, there's no time to play around like that.
That's why I think we don't see it very often. That's why I think it's something that's only saved for these Super Bowl type scenarios, because they don't want to risk the franchise doing that in a game that's like regular season and doesn't really mean a lot. And then they don't want defenses to prepare for that. They want that to still be an element of surprise. Like I think truly going back to it, people still do not expect him to really run on these play action. When's the last time Mahomes held the play action or the zone read in the regular season? Like, it just doesn't really happen. Every time they show that concept, it's a handoff. So I think that's part of the illusion. That's part of the mystery around it. We're still dissecting Super Bowl 50. A couple more things I want to talk about before I pass it back. The blocked PAT, obviously huge. One of the key plays in this game when you're talking about how KC actually executes the win. I mean, that keeps it at 3 instead of 4. Leo Chanel in it once again. And when you talk about special teams transformations, Mark, we were on this podcast last year dissecting the holds. There was former punters and former holders coming in and dissecting. Remember, Harrison Butker was hurt to start the year as well. So you had the revolving door of guys who were coming in and kicking. What he offered the team this year as far as his consistency, he goes 4 for 4 in this game once again. That whole unit, the transformation that they made, KC won the special teams battle in Super Bowl 58.
Yeah, you didn't even have to think about it. You know, like you mentioned last year, every attempt, you were on the edge of your seat hoping everything went perfectly from the snap, the hold, to the kick, right? So this year, you know, it was automatic. You know, I didn't even think twice. You know, I'm like, okay.
Yes, he missed two kicks all year, and it was in that deflate gate basically thing with New England, and then I think he missed the week after that.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, when you get to about the 35, you're like, okay, we got 3 points in our back pocket if you don't take a sack. I think that's what Mahomes played on this year as well, because you didn't see him take as many unnecessary risks, especially when they were in field goal range. You know, he'll take the sack or just throw the ball away, where in years past, he may try to force something in, run around and do the Mahomes magic thing. But I think he understands not only did he have a reliable kicking game, but he has the best defense he's ever had in his life. I mean, forget the NFL. Like, we know Texas Tech didn't have no defenses. I'm sure in high school he didn't have a great defense either. So this is the best defense he's ever had in his football playing career. So I do think it was an adjustment probably at first because he's not used to that. But I think as time went on and they kept playing at a high level, he's like, you know what? 20 points wins games. I can score.
That's 20. Wild. That's 20. Wild. But yeah, you're right.
I can score 23 or 24 points and win a game. I don't have to score 30 plus every week. So I think that was a major adjustment you saw in him being a game manager, which has this negative connotation to it, which I don't understand, because you want your quarterback to manage the game, because that's how you win football games. And it's great when You have a guy that can manage the game, but can also do playmaking things like Mahomes can at the same time. So it's a nice balance of knowing when to go there and when to just take in the sack or throw the ball away and take the 3 points and let your defense give you the ball back.
The day ones are in the chat. Jeremiah said Chiefs back-to-back champions. Steezy says, yeah, buddy, left that man for dead. We did kind of. There was a point in time in the year where you stopped making picks, essentially. You were threatening a holdout on the picks.
I never stopped, though.
Daniel Berry says, yo, Chiefs coast to coast. Episode 77, dissecting Super Bowl 58. You mentioned another key play, and I guess this can be one of the last key plays we mentioned. We'll mention more. Obviously, the Tom and Jerry play has been dissected forever. The corn dog motion paired with the power shovel play, basically, like with Jerick McKinnon, who fought his way back. We didn't know if he was going to play. I think the last pod, we were like, he's just there for moral support. Like, he's probably not going to give it a go. He picked up some key third downs in this one and actually was in on the game-winning play. He was part of the deception in that.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see him play that much, to say the least. I mean, and not only that, he was on there on a lot of pass blocking downs. We know how good of a pass blocker he is at the running back position. So, yeah, you would think he didn't miss any time. I mean, he came out there and looked like the Jerick McKinnon that you're used to. But I think also at his age, having that time off and extra rest definitely probably played a big part in that. And then also, you playing against his former team, you know, the Niners, who kind of gave up on him. He had a lot of injury history there, so a little extra added motivation there if you need any when you're playing in the Super Bowl, right? But I do think that was pretty cool to see him out there and get those snaps. And like you said, very significant.
Mecole Hardman catches the touchdown. You know, he's Mr. Walk-Off now. He's wearing the jersey at NBA All-Star Weekend and his full redemption story. We got that. MVS is the other touchdown for Kansas City. The guy that everybody wanted cut after the Philly game and his whole story. He makes the biggest catch in the AFC title game, essentially sealing that game. And then he has the one play drive off the punt, the muffed punt for San Francisco in this one. These unsung heroes on offense paired with on defense for me. I'll shout out two guys and then let you shout out some guys on defense. These unsung heroes in Super Bowl 58, Kansas City. How about L basically stepping into the Derek Nnadi role, faced off with Trent Williams a couple of times and gets the better side of him, completely shut down the interior running game for Christian McCaffrey, held him to like 3.5 yards per carry. Per what Leo Chanel did, the block punt or the block field goal, the forced fumble on, or he's in on that play for Christian McCaffrey. He's chasing Brock Purdy all over the yard. The depth pieces essentially played huge roles in this game for Kansas City, Mark.
Yeah, and speaking of that, shout out to Nick Allegretti once again. Filling in for Joe Tooney, all-pro left guard, and you didn't really hear his name called once again, which is a good thing for an offensive lineman. So you didn't really notice a drop-off, if any, to be quite frank with you. And you're going against two really good defensive fronts. I mean, Baltimore led the league in sacks this year. And then we know the Niners are always known for having a good defensive front with Chase Young and Nick Bosa highlighting that group. So I definitely want to give a major shout out to him. And he played injured. Do you see that, Aaron?
The UCL injury.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what would have happened if he couldn't have gone at that point. Who's the guy to fill in? You probably have to shuffle some guys around and have guys play out of position at that point. So considering that part as well, I mean, talk about being a tough guy and gutting it out for your team. So definitely major flowers to him. And then also the two turnovers, you know, you mentioned the one with CMC. Shout out to George Karloftis. Did you see the mic'd up where George Kittle said,
he was
talking to him, said, hey, George. He's like, forget saying, hey, dude, I'm going for the ball. So I want to give a shout out to him for being alert in that situation. And Jalen Watson recovered the muff punt. There was a lot of Niners in that area. So I think a lot of it had to do with these guys just being alert, having a situational awareness, because they were just quicker to the ball, it felt like, when it came to those crucial moments. I know Pacheco had the one fumble, but outside of that, it seems like the Chiefs always got the benefit of the bounce. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, just being the attacker, being alert. You know, you got the block, extra point, the two fumble recoveries, you know, almost had a pick. Remember that Nick Bolton play? I think the first drive of overtime, he nearly had that interception, and you would have already been in field goal range to win the game. So that's another play I don't think people obviously aren't talking about because it didn't happen, but just another example of guys just being around the football.
KC had some early ball security issues, though. The Pacheco thing, even the first play out of halftime, to then go along with Mahomes' first pick of the postseason. This is the one stat that stands out to me about just how improbable this run was for them, Mark. Like, there was a point in time where going back to the AFC Championship game, obviously they were shut out in the final two quarters of that game. And then going in, nobody scores in the first quarter of this game. Going into the second quarter, Mahomes and the offense go 17 straight drives without a touchdown. That's not without points. Obviously, they got points. 17 straight drives without a touchdown. You're going at Buffalo, at Baltimore, and now you're playing San Francisco, the number one seed in the NFC. Like, you think that eventually that catches up to you. You think that no matter how dynamic your defense is and how sticky your quarterbacks are, and how, like, elusive your quarterback is and how many things, like, Mahomes pulls magic rabbit out of a hat, but 17 straight drives out of a touchdown against that row. I know it wasn't exactly in that, but like it just that's nuts that they were able to pull that off to me. And I think when we look back, obviously dynasty now, but I think they might get a couple more. I think we look back, we might say, wow, that was quite possibly. I mean, I compare it to like a group of death in FIFA when you're making the World Cup draw. We're going to have a World Cup draw here in 2026. All the groups come out, and then you look at the one group and you're like, oh my goodness, Buffalo, Baltimore, Kansas City, San Francisco. Oh, no, wait. We don't want to get in that group. That group was lethal. They came out of that group. And during that, they went 17 drives out of touchdown mark. That's unreal.
Or it's like March Madness when you have that one region and you're like, look at that region. Like, Kentucky's an 8 seed. That's a scary 8 seed right there. Yeah. So yeah, I definitely get that analogy, but it's just a testament to the defense, man. I mean, they just kept them in games where you felt like if a team just had a good drive, right, you can kind of put them away. That team's had so many chances to go up 2 scores against the Chiefs throughout this playoff run, but the defense just would not allow it to happen. But I will say this about the offense. Even though they didn't score touchdowns on those drives that you mentioned, they weren't turning the ball over, though. That's one thing
Super,
I will
Super
say.
Bowl they were. That was the one thing where it was like,
they had two turnovers,
and San Francisco had chances. That's another
They didn't capitalize.
They didn't capitalize, bro.
Especially
they
had Mahomes' interception. Yeah, they had the ball at midfield. And they came away with no points.
No points.
That's another key point we need to talk about in that game. Because I even posted on X about that. Because I said they have to take advantage of this. I mean, you got to pick at near midfield. You come away empty-handed. To me, that was a telltale sign that if you're a Niners fan, this is not a good – it's not good for you right now that you didn't score off that interception.
Speaking of that, and I want to get to this. This is the one thing. There's so much crap that's said and before the Super Bowl, after the Super Bowl, whatever. The Super Bowl overtime, and I want to contextualize this, but where I was and where I was watching it, we were in the post-game live holding area. It's basically like a tunnel inside the stadium. We had vests on, and we watched the Super Bowl last 2 minutes on like a closed caption TV, basically a closed circuit TV. So I'm confused on the rules like a lot of people. I'm scrolling on X trying to figure out what's going on. I knew the touchdown thing. That was clear. Obviously, the Chiefs were part of the last part of that. And even NFL Films did a great job of saying how Kyle Shanahan and the Falcons were in that Super Bowl game before where Tom Brady got the ball, went down and scored a touchdown. Other team didn't have a chance, and that was it. That was history. It's no longer that way anymore. I knew that. But the clock is what gets me. And I think in the aftermath, that's the one thing where I'm like, well, okay, well, why do they have a clock if both teams get to possess the ball and score? Like, it just – that threw me for a loop a little bit. But hearing the mic'd ups, Mark – and then hearing what the 49ers say in the aftermath about not knowing the rules, getting wanting to receive the ball first, and Kyle Shanahan saying these words, we wanted the ball third. That to me is like, bro, you could have just came out and said you messed up. You didn't have to lie. It's cap a little bit. You don't want the ball third. The ball, having the ball third is not as valuable as having the ball second and knowing exactly what you could do with your fourth down. That is the most valuable to me. The 49ers flubbed this, and they're going to look back and they blame their analytics guy. It's bullcrap. We want the ball third is a lie.
Yeah, and did you see Mahomes' reaction after they wanted the ball? He said, they want it. They want the ball. And then Kelce was like, that's what we want. That's what we want. Because like you said, and I saw after the game, hypothetically, the Chiefs and Mahomes said it actually. If the Niners did score a touchdown, they would have went for two.
There was no third possession to be had. There was no third possession to be had. You could be out checkmated like that. It's just bad numbers, essentially.
Yeah, and then when you think about it, if you're the team that gets it second, let's say that first team does score a touchdown, it's like, why wouldn't you go for two? Because if you just tie the game up, all they need is a field goal to win. So if I'm going to lose, I'm going to lose with my offense on the field. So it would be interesting to see that. Obviously, I'm glad it didn't happen because that would have been so much stress. Could you imagine, Aaron, if it came down to a 2-point conversion for the Super Bowl?
But the Chiefs actually said, they said in hindsight, not only did they have the plan to go for two, but they knew what the play was going to be. Like, that is what stands out to me so much about this. It is a true comparison of someone who's prepared in this situation and someone who's not prepared. Like, maybe some people knew the plan over on the San Francisco sideline and some people knew that what their strategy was and we want the ball, but that was not a well-known thing. Meanwhile, in Kansas City, not only did they know the rules, but they knew exactly how they were going to execute those rules and play the end game out to where they had final control and the ball was in Mahomes' hands last, which I think even one of the refs was saying, why would you give him the ability to end the game? Like, it just, we want the ball third is one of the, you're trying to justify something that does not make sense.
It would have been hilarious to see how many Niners players would have celebrated if they scored a touchdown that first drive, thinking that the game was over. That would have been so hilarious.
They're running off the field. They're like, oh. It is funny to me that McColl didn't know that the game was over.
Oh, yeah.
That is.
Yeah, yeah. Mahomes like, bro, we're world champs. We
Mr. Walk-off.
Oh, man. What a storybook ending, right?
Yeah. And right after, speaking of the NFL films, you know, the talk of the three-peat starts right away. Mahomes says, you know, I want three. No one's ever done that before. Chris Jones is saying, you know, back-to-back, or I think maybe it was Kelce who said back-to-back is rare air, but, you know, that three, that to be able to have done it three times in a row. And Andy Reid was asked about it at the day after MVP ceremony and kind of was like, yeah, you know, we don't really do that. He gave his classic Andy Reid response. But I think they have to know that, you know, whatever, Dynasty, that conversation is pushed aside now. Now you have the opportunity to do something that, and I was watching PFF, they've kind of flashed up all the two-time winners trying to go for it. It's been a while since somebody even went to the bowl three times in a row. Like, you're in conversations now where it's like, these are, you're becoming era owners, era definers. You are game shifters and game changers. And I thought it was cool to hear them having those conversations, you know, 10 minutes after the horn went to triple zeros.
Yeah, I mean, and Mahomes is never satisfied. He said the same thing after last year, you know, hey, we ain't done yet. And, you know, he said the same thing after this one. I think it's just something that always keeps these guys motivated because now, like you said, you have a chance to do something that's never been done before in this league. And we, you know, we've seen it several times in the NBA with teams three-peating, like the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq, the Bulls with the Jordan in the 90s. Like, this happened multiple times in the NBA, but the NFL is the ultimate, you know, parody, right? And we always talk about that, you know, how everybody has a chance, you know, the salary cap. And, you know, like in basketball, if you get like three great players, you can kind of control a lot of things. And football, it truly is a team sport because Mahomes can't play defense, right? So it's a lot harder when it comes to football. So the fact that they're in this position, especially in a year like this, I mean, this was the worst regular season in the Mahomes era, and they still won the Super Bowl. They lost six games. So I think they have a lot of confidence now. And how can we as analysts and people that are breaking down these games, how can we even fake panic next year if they have a two-game losing streak after what we saw this year and they still overcame it and won the Super Bowl? It's going to be hard to speak negatively about them next year, even if they have a couple of rough patches.
Chiefs Coast to Coast Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, episode 77, looking at some of the fun bits from NFL Mic'd Up after Super Bowl 58. We talked about the three-peat talk kind of starting immediately in the aftermath for the Kansas City Chiefs. St. Louis Shock on YouTube says, what's up, boys? Brother Rick's got a question for us. We'll answer a little bit later in the show, but still talking about the NFL Mic'd Up. I thought it was cool to see the Pat Vic comment for Chris Jones, and they start mocking his little hand signals. Like, these guys are close. They've been through a lot. I think about their game in Germany and them going through that whole journey to Germany and how it built their foundation and the adversity. I think that's obviously core to what this team was this year, how they'll be remembered, how this year will be remembered, and kind of having to overcome little things throughout the way. Heck, they had to come back from 10 points down in the Super Bowl. And Chris Jones had some really emotional moments. I know he was emotional with George Karlaftis pregame as well. On the Niners side, I don't think we could ignore the impact of the Dre Greenlaw injury, Mark. Like, Fred Warner was visibly shaken up. And then you can see how it impacts the game because essentially, you know, Fred has to tail Kelce from then on out, and it changes some of the dynamics over the middle of the field. I don't think it's any coincidence that KC started moving the ball more effectively on offense, and you could see that the Niners were kind of impacted by that. The Mic'd Up gave us a really good look at that.
Yeah, Fred Warner was devastated, man. You could tell that. That's his boy. That's his running mate, obviously, at the linebacker position. And, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs started attacking that, especially in the second half. That weak spot, because, you know, the first half Kelce only had one catch for what, 1 yard in the first half, and then he ended
and
up-
there was that whole we haven't mentioned that. It's crazy. We went 30 minutes yeah. 30 minutes without talking about it. Do you want to? I didn't even put that on the rundown. That's my bad.
No, you're good. We ended up with 90 yards. You know, that one play at the end of the fourth quarter, he looked pretty spry. I thought he was maybe getting the end zone there for a second. They said he reached about 18 miles per hour. It's probably the fastest he's looked all year. So, I think you would be naive to think that Kelce was going to get just shut down the entire game. Because, I mean, one catch for 1 yard in one half is ridiculous for Travis Kelce, even at this.
Well, hold on. While you're there, you know there was an incident that caught a lot of steam and a lot of flack. Yeah. And, it's crazy. Yeah, we kind of both forgot about that. Nah, let's do the
deal. If they were lost, it would have been a way bigger deal.
What's your read on it?
So I think some people are blowing it up a little more than it should be, because I think it's easier for us because we cover the team, so we're closer to the situation, and we know how much Andy Reid means to Travis Kelce. I mean, he says all the time that he owes his career to Andy Reid. Like, he says that consistently. And, you know, a funny thing, and I think people forgot, I can't remember what game it was, but it was this year. Remember Andy Reid?
It's happened before. Yes, it's happened before. Yeah, it's happened before. This was a very volatile sideline for a while. And I think to me, it was like we hadn't seen it in a while, though. You know, like, that was the Chiefs when they were struggling, like the Buffalo game and like scenes on the sideline and the Kadarius Toney thing that happened in New England. Like, it had been a while since we saw the leaders of the Kansas City Chiefs be very outwardly negative about what was happening on the field. Like, they had kind of transformed themselves back into this thing where, you heard it in the Mic'd Up, like, everything's positive. They're going over to Pacheco right away and say, hey, put it away. You know, he's going, hey, that's on me. Like, everything is positive. Hey guys, let's be us. They say that all the time. Like, let's just do us. Let's be us. Like, it was so positive. And for that moment, that was the first time since the whole culture change or the Jack Jones play or whatever that we saw, like, oh no, like, on the biggest stage, tensions are high. We heard about the emotional pregame speech too. Like, I'm with you. If they lost, we have a different conversation here. But it's not nothing. It's not nothing to me.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's nothing. I think it was the fact that Andy Reid almost got knocked over. He didn't even see him coming. It's kind of got blindsided by it. And he made a joke after the game that Travis took a cheap shot on him. You know, he made it very light and classic Andy Reid fashion. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't a good look. I didn't like it at the time. When I saw it, I was like, come on, Kelce, you can't be doing that, man. You know, especially like Andy Reid, because Andy's not he's not one of these rah-rah coaches in your face kind of guy. I know, like I said, I mentioned they did have that little bump earlier, but that's not traditionally who Andy Reid is. Like, you'll expect to see that from like like a Nick Sirianni coach team or something like that. Or maybe even like a, you know, because he seems like he would invite something like that. You know, like him and
I mean, like in a different sport, you see Bill Self do that with players. He'll check players from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
I think maybe college basketball is a different. And I know there was
more like a father son dynamic there on college sports.
So maybe there is some truth to Andy coming out post game and saying, hey, like, I mean, that's just like how we are. That's kind of obviously Kelce is a lot different from a lot of players on the Chiefs. Like, I don't know a lot of players that can get away with that, but maybe we do kind of give credence to, as part of this championship nucleus, as part of this culture, as part of being the emotional leader and that you're the heartbeat of the team. Sometimes, I mean, he had dust ups in training camp we were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. He's looking like the grumpy old man in training camp, you know. Like, it's 100 degrees out here in St. Joe. These young dudes trying to bump me and mug me. Like, bro, I'm trying to go back home and get my ice bath. Like, get out of my face. And, you know, he had a lot of those moments this year where you're used to Kelce being, like, the joyful, playful, high energy in a positive way guy. This year, he kind of showed a little more of the grumpy old man this year. But, you know, I think maybe Taylor's kind of easing him up a little bit.
He's another guy that said he's coming back for the three-peat right after his Viva Las Vegas rendition. You know, he quelled any retirement rumors or anything like that. He's bought in for the three-peat. So now Kansas City turns their attention to retaining the Lombardi Trophy as the Super Bowl 59 is in New Orleans next year. You got, I saw you already say, hey, I got my New Orleans room ready. You already locked in.
I'm booked already. Yep. Yep,
it's crazy how you never get a credential to actually like work any of the Super Bowl thing. You know, I never want to go to Radio Row or.
I did last year in Arizona. Just like, come on, don't play me like that.
We were also supposed to link at the Amazon Lounge, and what happened? I was waiting for you.
I pulled up
like midnight. I waited for you at like.
C-Dot was still there. Jody was still there. D-Mac, and I'm like, "Where's Aaron?"
C-Dot was still there.
Yeah, see that way. Yeah, yeah.
Rare form.
Yeah.
I did see D-Mac there. D-Mac's in the chat. It was good to see a lot of people. Good to see folks. Vegas overall was his first time hosting the Super Bowl and all that. Really cool. They do it well. Obviously, Vegas hosts a lot of big events. I was there out there for the draft, but this one had a different feel. I mean, just obviously NFL world converging, NFL honors happening. The big stage and Vegas has so many hotel rooms. I feel like it was a positive experience overall.
Yeah. I don't know how you survived a whole week out there, man.
Nine nights.
Vegas, bro. I can only do like 2 or 3 days. And after that, I'm burnt out. But I mean, obviously I know you was there for work, so you probably weren't turning up like the usual Vegas trip, but maybe you were, I don't know.
That's a nasty toss. But maybe you were. I don't.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not speculating. I don't know for a fact. I'm just speculating. I don't. I have no clue.
Just stirring the pot. You're just stirring the pot.
I just left the open ended for you to take it over. But I'm sure you're gonna dodge that one and go to the next topic.
I am. I'm gonna dodge that one. And go to the next topic. It's parade day around Kansas City, and we didn't record last week. We wanted to give a lot of people to breathe and grieve in some spaces, and just for Kansas City to just sit for a moment and relax. It was a very tough day. I want to first send my condolences to the victim's family, Lisa Lopez Galvan, and really anybody who was impacted by this. This should not have happened. This was supposed to be a positive day. I don't think anybody expected this to happen. And there's a lot of bigger conversations that need to be had, but overall, the visual for me, and I think I said this on 610 last week, but I'll say it again here, like the visual of Trey Smith and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like having to console children and like who are going through this and how to like calm people down and keep people from not being anxious or looking at windows, and from it going for a day to us to celebrate their accomplishment to in a moment, people being scared for their lives. It's sad that we have to live this way. Truly, it shouldn't have to be this way. I don't know what your thoughts on it, Mark. I know we talked a little bit last week, but just a sad day overall. And there are bright spots from the parade, but I really can't even think about that. I think that there are bigger things than just a celebration and my overwhelming feeling from this day is just heartbreak.
Yeah, I want to echo your sentiments there. Definitely condolences to everybody that was involved, the family of the victims, and just anybody, even if you weren't a victim, just being there, like even you. I mean, that has to be a traumatic experience. Nobody should have to experience that. I'm thinking about all the kids that were there. You know, the parade is like very kid-friendly event. You know, people yeah. got their kids on top of their shoulders. And just for the kids that have to see that, and obviously half of the victims were minors. So that's just very, very heartbreaking, man. Just hate to see it, man. You really do. I was actually, obviously I wasn't there physically, but I was watching it streaming on 41 from my house.
Finally, here. You got the channel right.
I did get the channel right.
Yeah, you were the cross-violating right earlier in the day.
Yeah, you called me out for that as a good friend should. But, you know, like before all the wild craziness happened, you know, I'm seeing you on the street interviewing players, having a good time, and you know, it was a good vibe, man. And you just hate to see that a couple of people ruined it for millions, right? Thousands upon and millions. So just very unfortunate, man. And just wish that, you know, gun violence in this country, man, can really stop, because it happens every day, unfortunately. It's just very, very sad.
You're a kid from Kansas City. Have you been to a parade before? Have you been to one of the parades?
I haven't been to any of the Chiefs ones, but I went to the Royals one back in 2015.
Went to the Royals one back in 2015. I've been to the last two Chiefs ones, so I kind of get it. Last one was cold. This one was warmer. Obviously, what happened at the end, but a lot of the big conversation coming out of this and how we can kind of transition this story going forward is kind of talking about celebrations going forward. I mean, we've kind of said before that we expect the Chiefs to have another parade. Maybe the Royals will get there one day. Do they throw parades for Sporting Kansas City or any of those teams in the future? Well, what should celebrations look like, Mark? What do celebrations look like? Should celebrations change because of this situation? Is there a way to make these parades safer? Your thoughts in that realm.
Well, I know there was a lot more law enforcement involved for this event, but I'm not sure if you remember, but the draft, to enter the draft, you have to go through metal detectors. You couldn't just walk in and be in the draft area. You have to actually walk through and get your bags checked and things of that nature. Now, I know it'll take a lot more manpower and money and things of that nature, but if it can save a life, I think it's worth it. I mean, because you're talking about, I mean, I don't know, what was the number comparisons for the draft in the parade? Because I know
I haven't seen a million. Yeah, I haven't.
The draft probably had more than that. I can't remember it to be exact, because you would imagine fans from all over. But, I mean, the draft was a much bigger event, and, you know, I felt very comfortable and safe there. So maybe you go that type of route, because we've seen it done in that same area, obviously for a different event. But maybe you have to do something like that.
Would you be against having the rally at Arrowhead?
I don't like that, because I feel like now you shut off so many fans by doing that, because Arrowhead can only
Even if it's like a free event, but maybe like you have to have actual tickets to get into it. You know what I mean? Because the Braves did something similar. And we're just spitballing. This is just ideas. I the mayor did mention something about that, because this is something the city wants to address. And this is, I don't want to say a huge stain, but it is something that is negative. When we look back, this is a seminal moment of how this will be remembered. And I do think that there are going to be some pitches and proposals on how to change it going forward. The Arrowhead ticketing idea is one that's been thrown around.
But do you think this is just will be like a Kansas City thing, or parades in all other sports? Like, what's going to happen? Whoever wins the NBA finals this year, what are they going to do? Like,
I don't know.
You know, I think that's kind of more of the thing you should look at, is these upcoming parades in the other sports like the NHL and NBA, to see what they do, because it's not just a Kansas City thing. Like, this could happen anywhere.
Let's go to our Chiefs preview.
You can't do this. You can't escape. You can't make these plays. You can't make these throws.
Come on, give us a sneak preview.
Chiefs preview.
All right. Serta has been all over this, so I'm literally just going to pull up the text and read what pertains to the Chiefs as far as free agency is coming up. So the franchise tag window starts today. It ends March 5th. Free agency period is March 11th through the 13th. Legal tampering period and all that bull. Y'all know how that goes. And then the official league year starting 2024 league year starts on March 13th at 3 p.m. Central. The Chiefs have a list of impending free agents. This is also Steven Serta. Going to give that boy some love. Y'all know the obvious ones. Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed. Brett Veach has already gone on record about saying how they're a priority coming into this year. Ironically, you know, I live by the QT here in Westport. I saw L'Jarius Sneed today. So he's he's in KC. Yes, indeed.
Wow.
I saw L'Jarius Sneed today. I don't know if that's, I mean, you can aggregate me from there. Yes, L'Jarius Sneed is in Kansas City. The other guys, Donovan Smith, Willie Gay, Derek Nnadi, Jerick McKinnon, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Mike Edwards, Mecole Hardman, Mr. Walkoff, Tommy Townsend, Mike Dana, Nick Allegretti, Andrew Tranquil. We don't have to go each one by the numbers, but give me one of those guys that maybe interests you as somebody who you want to keep here in the kingdom, Mark, and then maybe a guy you want to keep but you think might be too difficult to keep.
Yeah, so, I mean, looking at that list, I mean, obviously, we don't have to mention Chris Jones and Sneed. Obviously, you want to keep them, but
yeah,
can you keep them both? I don't know. I think you can keep one for sure. Keeping both may be a little tricky.
Who's the one for sure?
Yeah. Oh, what, if I had to pick?
Yes, who's the one for – you said you can keep one for sure. Who's the one that you for sure can keep?
Man, I'm going to have to say L'Jarius Sneed. Just because of the age, he's 3 years younger. I like the idea of having the best cornerback tandem in the league with him and McDuffie. And with Chris Jones, as great as he is, he's 30 years old. How many more dominant years does he have left? I think one for sure, maybe two, maybe. But I think you can lean maybe on your edge guys being more of your dominant part of your line instead of up the middle, like George Karloftis. We know you're hoping on FAU in year two to be a factor when Charles Omenihu comes back next year. I think you could still have a formidable defensive line. Obviously, it won't be as good without Chris Jones, but I still like the idea of having the best secondary because it can still help the D-line. It goes hand-in-hand. People always want to mention how the D-line can help the secondary. Well, it can go the other way as well, too, with sticky coverage. So I have to say Sneed by it's close, though. It's super, super close. But as far as that list, as far as other guys, like your underrated guys, I guess if you could say that I want to keep, it has to be Drew Tranquil. It has to be Drew. I mean, we talked about him this year a lot.
He added
a different dimension to the team, especially like when Willie Gay went out, he was able to be that guy. Nick Bolton missed time as well. And he had to play the green dot. He played multiple positions on a linebacker spot. And I think he's a guy that really loves being here. I mean, I'm sure you saw his sound bites at the parade. I mean, he said,
"Oh yes."
He took a shot at me. He said, "This is way better than L.A."
A Mark Gunnell stray.
That was towards me. He was like, "What you doing out there, man? It's way better in Kansas City." So I think he's a guy that would stay here, like on a kind of a hometown discount. Not to say he's going to break the bank anyway, but I think he just truly loves being in this winning environment, especially coming from the Chargers where they always came up short. You could tell he really embraced the culture here. He always raved about how everybody's so prepared and the expectations are just so high. So I think he definitely wants to settle in Kansas City. So he's a guy for sure I want to keep.
Looking at this list, I'm going to say a couple of things. Well, the first of them might be controversial, Mark. Out of Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed, the possibilities that you mentioned, one or both, I think it's most likely that it's neither. Hey, have you not considered that possibility? That with Jones's tag number being in the 30s and realistically somebody's going to shoot him a high ball offer and Sneed being a cornerback where they don't even really sign guys to second contract at that position. They haven't done it since when, 2017 or something like that. Like there is a world in which they say, hey, we're going to live in this middle ground defensively. We're going to make a lot of the Drew Tranquil signings. I agree. he's a guy that comes back for the cheap. Nick Allegretti, I think, is a guy that comes back for the cheap. Mike Dana maybe comes back for the cheap if you're out of the Chris Jones market.
So if that's the case, then you think Willie Gay's coming back then?
I don't know if Willie Gay's coming back. And I also think as far as the running back room is concerned, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Jerick McKinnon are elsewhere as well. I could see them going draft shopping in the running back room. I could see them going free agent shopping potentially in the running back room. I don't know if that's the most – I don't know if a lot of people are thinking that, but as far as how KC likes to do business, Mark, how they've done these deals, hell, the deal that they got Chris Jones back on this year was cheaper than the tag. He would have made more money on the tag, and it would have been guaranteed. He wouldn't have had to get all these incentive-laden stuff. Like, I do think there's a world where Brett Veach says, this is my number, I'm staying here, and if you want to compete for titles and you want to go three-peat, come here at this number. And I can see him saying that to both guys respectfully.
See, I think he bends on one of them. I just don't see a world where you can lose your two best defenders and then sell Mahomes and Kelce that, hey, we're going for a three-peat. I do think this is a rare situation to where you do have to entertain giving a cornerback a second contract, because before the year, I was exactly there on, no, you don't pay a cornerback. Brett Veach doesn't do that. But Snead play at such an elite level to where he makes you have to reconsider that way of thinking. And he's still going to be cheaper than Chris Jones because cornerback market is not nearly as high.
It's like 16. It's like exactly half, right? Like, yeah. If Chris Jones wants 32, Legarius Sneed is around in the 16. But exactly. It's like when your parents said, we got McDonald's at home. You know, we can't get McDonald's and eat half food at home. Like, yeah, they can't do both, Mark. This is – go ahead.
So if just let's live in your world for a second. If they lose both, are you saying that they make a big splash at receiver? Because something has to make up for losing your best two defenders.
No. I honestly, this is our first dabble into the offseason talk. This is our first taste of these storylines. I think Snead and Jones is going to be the big one. It depends. It depends on what deal you can get. I think maybe if Snead signs a team-friendly deal, then you can load up and get Jones. Jones has already also, back to Parade Day, publicly said, I ain't going anywhere. So that helps your leverage a lot if you're the team. I think I saw
much,
even the
how eight. How much stock do we put into that, though? Because he was clearly drunk. Do we put any stock into that?
I think if you're Chris Jones, you go into the day saying, there's one thing I can't say on stage. And then you say the thing though that you say on stage and you cost yourself like $5 million. That's a strong drink. Saying I want to go for the three-peat is one thing. And even Legarius Sneed on Kay Adams had a little bit more interesting. Like, I caught him on the parade route. He said, I'd love to be here, yada, yada. But on Kay Adams, he's like, pay me. Like, we're early in this thing, man. Like I think it's likely that Sneed is tagged.
I could see that. I'm not mad at that.
But the Chiefs don't like using the tag, though.
Got to use it on somebody, though, right? This year?
We'll see. We got time. This is a little rumor. Before we get to Vegas, one little quick rumor, and I know you like rumors. We're running long here on Chiefs Coast to Coast, episode 77. You love rumors, and this rumor about Jason Kelce partying with the Chiefs in Vegas, and he hasn't officially retired yet, and what if he wants to play with his brother? We're going to our rumor expert. Have you heard anything on – have you ever heard anything on the New Heights relocating to Kansas City and possibly the brothers playing together one year in the kingdom?
There's zero chance this happens.
Zero chance!
I mean, is he going to change positions? You already have an all-pro caliber center in Creed Humphrey. Like, so what are you going to do?
What I heard, and please don't report this.
Boy, he's going to play left guard.
It's a conversation in between. Yeah, they're basically, because Creed was having some struggles, especially Super Bowl. I think the whole thing that pissed Rashee Rice off in the Super Bowl, that he missed that, and Mahomes goes to him on the sideline, and I thought the lip readers basically caught him saying, hey, motherfucker, he rolled it to me. I had to do what I could do. And there was a couple where Creed, you know, that aspect hasn't been the same. I'm not the best O-line breakdown, and I don't think Mark is either. We can tell when the snap is on the ground, you got to catch it at your shoelaces versus your kneecaps. And it messed up a couple plays. So The rumor is you would learn from one of the GOATs, play alongside him wherever that fits you. And, you know, this is a guy that Andy Reid, you know, has a connection to. It's not part of every rumor is a little bit of you can't say 0%.
See, it's funny now. You're doing what you accused me of doing. You're being the TMZ rumor guy. I see a tweet from our post from a guy that has 1,000 followers, but it got some traction though. You was on a Reddit thread. This is one of those topics, man. I'm not entertaining this nonsense.
Let's go to Vegas.
Place your bets.
Oh, there it is. Two touchdowns. Win by at least two.
Let's go to Vegas with Mark.
Don't call it a comeback. Wow. What a run.
I'm proud of you, man. I'm really proud of you. I didn't see this coming. I don't think Serta saw this coming. I know our audience didn't see this coming, because if they were betting with you for the first half of the year, they had to have stopped. Mark Gunnels finishes above 500. Courtesy a 5-1 Super Bowl 58 ticket as follows. The only miss, and you were a point away from a perfect ticket. The only miss was the over on total points. You had it at 47.5. The game total finished at right at 47, 25, and the difference
was that block extra point, even though I was a Chiefs fan, I'm glad it happened. So
Mark Gunnels is a perfect ticket away, or one blocked PAT away from a perfect ticket. The rest of it is Mahomes MVP that cashed, along with Chiefs money line. KC team total over at 23.5. Brandon Ayuk, the under on his receptions at 61.5. And then you took the Mahomes over passing yards, which is an easy cash at 261.5. He finished with 333. Mark Gunnels, 5-1 in Super Bowl 58, 14-2 in his last 16 plays. I mean, my goodness, to finish the year at 32-31-1. Wow. Mark Gunnels finishes right. A photo finish. But seriously, man, you finished the year out great. You showed up when it mattered the most. You took some bullets there. We were giving you some crap throughout the year. You were hanging your head, but you stuck through. And adversity really shaped you. You know, Matt Nagy must be your offensive coordinator as well.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you weren't listening to me for the first half and you just played the last 16, yeah, I mean, I paid your rent for the next, like, 6 months. I mean, my
God. Get the house on it.
14-2 to finish the year. I mean, even I had my own doubts. But I did, and you mentioned it early on, though, that I started to change my formula and the way
change
I
changed the formula. Yeah.
Yeah, I did a little more. I went deeper into my plays. I didn't do the, you know, your typical Mahomes over on passing touchdowns for a game or something like that. You know, it was the one that really cashed for me that was inconsistent was taking the wide receiver one of other teams under. I literally cashed every single time.
They should have fed Ayuk the ball more. One of the biggest letdowns for San Francisco is that they tried to put Debo in a situation that they had Ayuk for, and basically that lost them the game.
Yeah, so definitely proud to finish this way, man. I know it was a rough start, but I got some good momentum going into next year, man.
I'm proud of you. Take some time. Relax. This is a good time to update y'all on our recording schedule. Steven Serta wants y'all to know, make sure that this is our final show until after the NFL draft. We'll kick off our draft pods and that kind of stuff this week on Arrowhead Prize. So this will be our final draft, or excuse me, our final pod until after the NFL. Where is the draft this year?
It's in Detroit.
Ooh, I might skip that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Yo, Chiefs got with the last pick. Yo,
in Detroit, man.
We just been getting some NBA All-Star game was in Indianapolis. Draft is in Detroit.
Ooh. Last year, the NBA All-Star weekend was in Salt Lake City.
Super Bowl New Orleans next year, that'll be great. That'll be fun if the Chiefs are there. I mean, you already booked your room, so I guess you're assuming that. So, yeah, I'm going to take some time off. I got some trips coming up. When are you coming back to KC?
Sometime in the spring. I'll be out there when the weather gets more consistent out there.
Catch a Royals game.
Yeah, let's go to the K. Let's grab a – well, you'll be working, though, all the games, do you, huh?
I can catch a – we can make something happen.
Let's catch a beer at the ballpark, man.
This was a good final episode. This was a good episode to go into a break for. Let me scroll through and see if we got any comments. Brother Rick, who's your first round draft pick?
It depends on what they do in free agency. So it's hard to answer that right now. But I mean, I always want a sexy toy, so I'm thinking receiver. I like Troy Franklin from Oregon. Deep ball threat. I like him a lot.
Shout Alex out to one. You know, go ahead.
Shout out to the Kingdom's Queens in the building. D-Mac, I see him in the chat.
Absolutely. Alex says, tags need if you really want to keep him because somebody else will offer him more money.
It's probably true. I mean, you got to think, teams are going to take away from the Chiefs even if they got to overpay. Like, if we can make the Chiefs weaker, especially like an AFC team. I mean, like, a team I'm looking about like is the Texans. The Texans are in the perfect spot because they got C.J. Stroud on a rookie contract. They have, I think, like the top three in cap space. So they're going to be a big spender because they feel like they can cash in with C.J. on a rookie deal, you know, load up on talent. And you already made the playoffs, so you're already ahead of schedule. So the Texans are a team I'm looking out for next year.
If I'm the Chiefs, though, and we can wrap. If I'm the Chiefs, though, like my argument is, do you want to win or not? I mean, do you want to be figuring it out with a quarterback who's never done it before, or do you want to play with Patrick Mahomes? Like, it's not that hard, and I think a lot of times that gets it done in deals because the proof is in the pudding, essentially. And we'll see. Maybe it works on some guys, it doesn't work on others. There's moves that were happening at this very moment, but we'll see you guys again after the NFL draft. Mark Gunnels, take us away, man.
Hey, man, another great season in the books. In a little Super Bowl championship, man. I'm going to miss you, buddy. It's going to be a...
Oh! I'm
going to miss you, man. I'm going to have to actually call you outside the show now.
Yes. Yes. Hit my line when you're in the city. Make sure you're good to touch base. You know, make sure you're good around here.
Yeah, but I got to check in when I come, so I'll definitely be hitting you up.
Give my $75, Mark.
Oh, my God.
Give me my money.
See y'all after the draft, man. We out.
Give me my money.
Hey there, it's Pete Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride, and I'm excited to announce a new element of the Arrowhead Pride experience for diehard Chiefs fans. It's our brand new newsletter, Arrowhead Pride Premier. Arrowhead Pride Premier is a newsletter delivered to your inbox twice a week from me. For $50, you'll get an annual subscription packed with insider coverage from yours truly and new in-depth analysis from voices around Kansas City. It's all about what I'm seeing and hearing around the team. During the season, we'll deliver a newsletter ahead of each game to get ready for Sunday, and a newsletter after each game to unpack exactly what happened. Subscribe to Arrowhead Pride Premier today at arrowheadpride.com/subscribe.